Welcome to Brad Kyle's Brad's Motorworks podcast. We'll be talking about some things about BMW, some things of cars in general, and some things about car repair. I hope you find it educational, enlightening, and I hope it increases your understanding of your car. And maybe along the way we'll have some fun too. Thank you for listening, and here we go. Episode number 29, Tires and Alignment. This particular episode, a lot of it, the information I'm going to be giving is going to be kind of specific BMW, since that's where most of my experience with, and I can certainly make decent tire recommendations in that regard, especially by brand name. But a lot of it also will be just general as well. You know, I'm trying to kind of cover all the bases. First thing, not to be dropping a name or be mentioning a slogan, but it's a slogan that I really like. It's a tire manufacturer slogan, happens to be Michelin. But if you think about it, it's really actually very true. And their slogan is, because everything is riding on your tires. And certainly in regards to cars and going anywhere, driving, that's it. I mean, the entire connection between you, your car, and that road, short of going out of control, is your tires. So everything is riding on your tires. So it is important that you get the right tires for your car. When I say that, I mean, everybody's kind of different. I can tell you in the past, in working at the dealership I worked at in the 11 years that I was at a BMW dealership, we certainly, you know, cars came off the truck from brand new with whatever brand of tires they had on them. Back then, it was everything from Michelin, Pirelli, Goodyear, BF Goodrich, Continental. And the thing that was funny with BMW is that on some of the tires, you know, the customers, as they were driving them, and the car was under warranty, but see, BMW, because that part is not something they made themselves, people would think that the tire had a 4-year 50,000 or 3-year 36,000 mile warranty like the car did at that time. That's not actually the case. The tire warranty is a separate warranty from whoever made the tires that were put on the car. So we definitely had some people that, over the course of them driving the car and the car still under warranty, they, you know, the complaints were like, well, the tires are noisy. They didn't get good tread wear. I don't like the way the car feels. It doesn't handle very well. So on and so forth. And this varied, you know, some brands of tires worked good on some models of BMWs, but yet that same brand of tire didn't work very well on other models of BMWs. The only tire brand that I realized and came to the realization that nobody ever complained about, except for at the time of replacement, they were a little bit pricey, happened to be Michelin. Okay, so even in the today, that's what I put on my own car. I've got a BMW, and certainly when customers are talking to me about, you know, what brand of tire or what tire to put on, I certainly tell them I would go with Michelin, and then you kind of figure it out from there, depending upon whether you want a really ultra-high performance tire or an all-season tire, so on and so forth. So getting back to, because everything is riding on your tires, It literally is. It is important that you have, you know, it's kind of like getting a change of pair of shoes. I mean, you can you could be uncomfortable and maybe you're on your feet all day and you get a different pair of shoes that are made better or made to more of what you're wanting them to do. And gosh, all of a sudden you're comfortable and you've got plenty of energy at the end of the day, so on and so forth. Tires are kind of the same way. You can definitely improve the way a car feels potentially immensely by getting the right tires for it. You can also take a car that felt good with, the old set of tires and you get something newer. Maybe they're less expensive. And unfortunately, you pay a price for that, whether it be, you know, poor tire wear or, you know, again, noise and handling, so on and so forth. The other thing to think about, and again, this kind of varies. I mean, with today's cars, they tend to have bigger tires on them. But if you average it out, the total contact area at any given time, in other words, as that tire is rotating and four tires on a car, if you were to measure the actual what's called the contact area, so this would be the area, the actual square inches of at a given period of time that that tire is actually in contact with the road. If you add that up for all four tires, it's about 1 square foot of area. Okay. Now, again, obviously, if you have bigger tires on the car, you're going to have a slightly bigger contact area. But that's, again, that's the only thing that's connecting that car and you to the road, is about 1 square foot of rubber at any given time. So obviously, you know, depending upon how the car is driven, whatever forces are being generated on that car, whether it be acceleration, braking, you know, cornering, centrifugal forces, yaw forces, longitudinal forces, they're all being transmitted through those tires, and that's the only thing that's holding you on the road. Okay, so just, you know, a bit of information. Another little factoid, and again, this has been true for a long time, the most underperformed maintenance item in this country is tire pressure. Okay, it just doesn't get done. And in the state of California, I think it was in 2010, the California Air Resources Board, which is the California version of the EPA, there's actually a law that was put out that us repair shop owners, like myself, we are now held responsible for every time a car comes in and a repair order is written for any reason, we're responsible for checking and adjusting and documenting tire pressures. Okay. Now, the CARB was only concerned about it in regards to emissions, and I'll talk about that in a moment of why that comes into play. But that's all they were concerned with. But having improper tire pressure, usually what happens, frankly, when I'm checking cars, usually they are under pressure. It may only be a pound or two. It may be 4, 5, 6, 7 pounds. But it's extremely rare, believe it or not, for me to check all four tires and I don't have to add air to at least one of them, if not potentially all four. Okay. It's definitely a common thing. People just don't check tire pressures. And it ends up costing the consumer millions of dollars a year. And the reason I say that is, again, typically, especially if they're under pressurized, you're essentially you're increasing the rolling resistance of the tire. So what's happening is the tire, as it's rolling down the road, it's basically squashing as it comes in contact with the road. So that generates basically friction, which generates heat. It also makes it harder for it to roll. So you're increasing the rolling resistance, which means that now the car has to work harder. The engine, there's more engine power used to propel that car down the road because the rolling resistance of the tires has gone up. And again, that goes back to fuel mileage and emission issues. Of course, the other side of it, as far as the tire is concerned, is that there is what's called under pressure wear. There's also over pressure wear, and I'll talk about that in a minute. With low tire pressure, you're going to potentially affect the handling of the car, especially like in cornering and doing like any kind of evasive maneuvers. Because what happens with under pressure tires is that the tire now, because it's not at the proper pressure, it's too low. When you like go into a corner or you're trying to do any kind of evasive maneuver, that tire, instead of staying shape and, you know, transmitting the forces between you and the ground and the car and the ground, that tire now will roll underneath itself. Okay, so in other words, it'll have more flex, which affects the handling of the car. The car is not as responsive. The tire starts to roll underneath itself. It starts to affect tire wear to the point where, you know, if you are trying to actually avoid an accident, you see something's coming up and you're trying to, you know, use your car and your steering and suspension and get around it, okay, the one connection you have, the only connection you have between you and the car and the road is that tire. And if it's not at proper pressure, you're potentially talking about accident participation instead of accident avoidance, okay? And this is all because of low tire pressure. So this is why, you know, the studies have been done where someone's figured out, supposedly, that it costs consumers millions of dollars a year because you're not getting the proper tire wear you could be getting. Your fuel mileage is going down. Okay, there's higher emissions, and there's potentially accidents that are involved that can be traced back, if possible, to low tire pressure. That was the root cause of the accident, to where, you know, gosh, if you'd had proper pressures, maybe you could have not had that accident, and there was no physical damage to the cars, or potentially even bodily damage. Okay, you know, physical damage to you and I. Okay, so tire pressure is very, very important. If you want to be checking it yourself, every car is supposed to have on the what's called the B pillar. This would be when you open the car, the door of your car, the front left door. That would be driver's side, in this country anyway, driver's side left door front. As you open the door, that pillar, that vertical metal that the door latches onto normally. In other words, this would be to your right as you're entering the car, left front door. There's going to be a sticker somewhere on that B pillar. Okay, this would be where it's kind of like sort of inside the car, but not really. It's on the area where the door closes to the B pillar. There's going to be a sticker there or a plaque that shows what the tire pressure should be. Okay, that is from the manufacturer, and assuming that someone hasn't gone to some weird, you know, aftermarket tire combination, those are the pressures to use. Now, you do have to be careful. I can speak about BMW. They will put like two different readings on there, not just front and rear tires, but they'll show like regular loading, and then they'll show like maximum loading. So in other words, if the car was fully loaded, you know, five people, luggage, the whole shebang, there is a higher pressure reading than what would be shown for normal. Unless you're literally going to have that car maximum loaded out, you want to use the lower pressure, okay, which again, it varies. It could be 32 all the way around. That's PSI, pounds per square inch. It could be 32, 34. I've seen all the way up to 38 and I think 42, okay. Now, you can put the pressures at whichever you want, okay. I have some customers that they don't want their pressures up that high. And so because they claim that they get adverse tire wear. So legally for me, on this, you know, real quick thing they're signing in regards to the tire pressure, they're basically, they can decline me doing it. So it takes the responsibility off of my hands and puts it on them. Okay. And that's fine as long as we have the proper paperwork. But bottom line is that tire pressure is extremely, extremely important. It's definitely not something that's done as much as it should be. I mean, frankly, the number two underperformed maintenance service in this country is proper oil and filter changes, but that's on a different podcast. As far as me talking about that, I just kind of threw that in. Tire wear. Well, I'm going to try to explain this. Obviously, it's a visual thing, but essentially, the four different kinds of tire wear are, you can have tire wear on the inside edge. In other words, if you're looking across the face of the tread of the tire, and frankly, on most cars, especially the tires in the rear, to really be able to, this is not something you just take a casual glance where you're, you know, you back away from the car and you're just looking at it from a distance away. If you really want to see this properly and the car is on the ground, you're going to need to get down on your hands and knees and really be able to see the whole picture. Because if you just take a casual glance at it, you won't necessarily see the inside edge. And you'll think your tires are okay, maybe, and maybe they're not. Okay, I see this because, you know, obviously when I work on cars, they're up in the air, I'm doing oil changes or whatever, and so I'm looking at the tires, and that's when I can really, you know, I can see the whole thing. And so I make it a point of telling the customer, especially if I see, you know, inside tire wear, that, you know, don't just take a casual look at them, okay, because you're going to miss the whole picture. So wear on the inside edge only, okay, is what's called negative camber wear, okay. If you can visualize, if you're at the back of the car and you're looking straight on forward at it towards the front of the car, this would be where the top part of the tire is tilted in towards the car and the bottom part of the tire is tilted out away from the car. That would be considered negative camber wear. Now, the opposite of that is positive camber wear, and that's where the outside edge of the tire is wearing faster than the rest of the tread across the face of the tire. So then, of course, the opposite of that would be true, in that on positive camber wear, the top part of the tire is leaning away from the car and the bottom part of the tire is leaning towards the car. Okay. Now, as far as this lean I'm talking about, this is not typically you're going to be able to visually see, because we're talking about it can be less than a degree or whatever. Okay. It doesn't take much necessarily of the alignment specifications to be out to where you start getting adverse tire wear. Another wear thing to look at, again, that's a little bit hard to see or explain really, is what's called feathering. And this is because of toe issues, whether it be toe in or toe out. Basically, if I can try to describe it as, if you were to take your hand and run it, just gently run it across the face of the tread, okay? In other words, back and forth across the face. When you run it back and forth, you shouldn't feel anything like where the tire is like biting at you, so to speak, or grabbing your hand or your fingers as you're running it back and forth. And this is obviously very subtle, okay? In other words, if you run it back and forth, if everything is proper and right, you're not going to feel where when you go, let's say, go from the outside to the inside of the tire, that it feels like something is like, grabbing your hand, so to speak, or there's this roughness to it. And when you go the other way, there's not a roughness. It should be pretty smooth in and out. Okay. If you run it from inside to outside and you feel this sort of grabby feeling, okay, and then you run it back from outside to inside and you don't feel it, okay, that's called feathering. And in that case, the issue is a toe-in problem, okay? If it's the opposite of that, where if you run it from the inside to the outside and it feels okay, but when you're running it from the outside to the inside with your hand and you feel this grabby kind of roughness to it, that's toe-out wear, okay? And again, that doesn't tell you how bad it is or anything. It's simply a matter of, by knowing how to read the tires, so to speak, look at them, touch them, feel them, and realize what it is you're looking at and what you're feeling. These are the different things that can happen to them. Is camber wear, feathering, toe wear, okay? Also, you can have under and over pressure wear. Under pressure wear is where the if you're looking across the face of the tread, the center of the tread will have more tire tread available. In other words, there'll be less wear on the center part of the tread than the outside and inside edges. Okay. It's because what's happening again is that the tire is deforming as it's coming around and hitting that. The center of the tread of the tire is actually kind of like going up inside of itself. In other words, it's pulling away from the road, okay? And the outer and inner edges are in contact with the road. So what will happen with under pressure is the center part of the tread will have more tread available on it than the inner and outer edges, okay? The opposite of that would be true in regards to overpressure wear. On overpressure wear, the center of the tire will have more tread wear, in other words, less tread available, than the inner or the outer edges. And that one's probably a little bit more kind of easier to make sense, because if the tire is overpressurized, then it's going to be bulging. It's going to be like a balloon that's too big or blown up too big. And so the center part of the tread will be ballooning out, so to speak, and that's what's going to get more tread wear on it. Okay. So that's the tread wear issues. In regards to alignments, some people would say, every time you get new tires, you should have the car aligned. Okay. Well, that's one way of going. That's probably if you want to be safe, that's certainly the best time to get an alignment is when it's got brand new tires all the way around, because that way the tires, There can be situations where if you had tires that are really adversely worn and maybe somebody went ahead and aligned it with those worn tires, it can affect the alignment readings that they were using to set the alignment on the car. And then you go ahead and you get brand new tires, and that car is going to potentially sit differently with new tires on it, and so it could actually affect the alignment. So especially if you don't know the history on the car, maybe it's the first time, maybe you bought the car used and it's the first time you're getting tires for it. Yeah, it might be a good idea to go ahead and have the alignment checked and or adjusted. Okay. It it really also, I mean, for me personally, I just look at the wear pattern on the car, on the tires, on the car. My own car, I have owned the car for 13 years, and I have never had the alignment checked, okay? I have done some front control arm bushings, if I remember correctly, on that car, but I've never had to do any repairs to where I knew that I would lose the alignment per se. And, of course, I can look at my tire wear, and my tires wear normally. They wear nice and evenly across the face. I've had to put on probably a total of about 3 or 4 sets of tires on the car. But I've also, myself personally, I put 100,000 miles on the car as well. And there was one period of time for 4 days where that car was at a high-performance driving school. So I was driving it 4 days in a row on a track. It wasn't a race. It was high performance driving with my car. I've had a blast, by the way. It's a lot of fun. But obviously, the brakes and the tires on that 4 days took a bit of a beating because I was driving the snot out of the car. But so if you average it out, I mean, I'm getting about 25 or 30,000 miles out of my tires. Okay. My car is not a, you know, quote-unquote performance car. I do put on my car, I put Michelin Pilot PS2s, Pilot Sport PS2s, I think is the model of them. But, you know, you have to kind of look at your climate, you know, where you are. I mean, obviously, for people that are in the snow climate, you know, there is a point where, yes, you want to get snow tires, and those are specifically used during snow, during the winter months. But there's also all season tires, which is kind of a compromise, frankly, as far as tires go. You know, they solve a problem. They perform a function. They are not, they're neither high performance tires where they're that, you know, far to one side that they're considered high performance tires. And they're also not, you know, tires that are, really good in snow and ice, 'cause they're not. All season tires are a compromise, just to let you know. I'm not overly a big fan of them, but then again, I live in Southern California, so I'm not driving my car to where it gets really cold out, so on and so forth. You have to be really careful with high performance tires, to where they do not take the cold very well, and they certainly are, forget about snow or ice, but they do not take the cold very well. They're only good down to about, I think, around 30 degrees or so, and then they start not being a good tire for your car. Okay, they're designed for high performance. So you kind of have to look at, you know, your driving style, what your expectations are from the car, the climate you're driving it in, as far as, you know, you picking out what you feel is the best tire for you. In regards to shopping for tires, if from a reference standpoint, and certainly you could order them from them anyway if you wanted to, but if you want to spend some time online, the place that I would go to is called TireRack.com, okay? You can punch in, you know, make, model, year, and it'll ask you some different questions about the car, and then it's going to give you, you can certainly look by things, look up tires for just by brand name if you wanted. You can look up to see what is available from everything they have as far as all the brands. It just, for one-stop shopping in regards to, you know, being able to look up tires for your car, that's probably the best, easiest website to go to. And yes, of course, you can order the tires from them. The other thing they do is they will reference, you know, preferred installers that are in your area, which these are supposedly shops that have said, yes, it's okay with us if the customer buys the tires from Tire Rack and they get drop shipped to the tire installer directly to them. So you don't have to deal with them. And you guys set up the appointment and off you go. You know, they will do that. But that's up to the individual shops. And I would certainly recommend if you go ahead and order tires that you give that shop a call and make sure they, you know, give them a heads up that there's going to be some tires coming and here's what you're going to do, what you want to do, and so on and so forth. So getting back to the alignment, you know, again, I'm, you know, certainly if you want to know for sure, the only way to find out is to have the car aligned. Okay. In regards to that, there is what's called two-wheel line alignment versus a four-wheel alignment, okay? This is assuming, of course, they're using a computerized alignment machine, which, you know, let's face it, that's what shops are going to be using. A two-wheel alignment is where they set up the different alignment heads on the tires, but the machine creates an artificial center line down the center of the car. So this is on a two-wheel alignment. So we're talking about the front wheels are what's being aligned, okay, only. And so the machine, when you're doing a two-wheel alignment, the machine generates an artificial center line down the center of the car, and that's what the tires and wheels are aligned off of, is that artificial center line, okay? A four-wheel alignment is where they're putting the alignment heads on the tires, but now the technician can actually see what's called the thrust angle of the rear tires. So they can see not only the toe and camber and caster of the rear tires and also the front, but they can see if the rear end, if let's say there's a toe out on one side and a toe in on the other side, you're going to have it to where the thrust of the car, in other words, the rear end is going to be pushing the car to the left or the right. And they'll be able to see that and either be able to adjust it out, or they can align the car to the thrust line instead of the center line. Okay. So a four-wheel alignment, especially on today's car, you know, again, I work on BMWs. I would certainly, if someone's going to get the car aligned, I would recommend a four-wheel alignment. Frankly, any car that would be considered a, you know, performance type handling car, I would recommend a four-wheel alignment. In regards to what actually can be changed as far as the actual alignment specifications, I can, at this point right now, I can only tell you about BMW because that's what I know. So on the front end, the only thing that can be changed is the toe. The caster and camber are set. Now, the technicians should still be looking at those readings, and if they're not within spec, within specification, basically BMW says that it means something is either bent or worn out, which they're saying that needs to be replaced. So if the caster or camber on the front end of a BMW is out of spec, it's because something is either bent and or worn out, okay? So before the alignment is done, you know, obviously the suspension and steering should be checked visually and otherwise to make sure there are no worn parts that you can see, okay? And again, sometimes, you know, trying to see a part that's just barely bent can be hard to see, okay? That they may not be able to find that out until the car is actually being, they're trying to align it and they realize, well, wait a minute, the camber's way out on this thing. It's not adjustable. We already know that there's nothing worn out. There's no play in a ball joint or anything like that. So there's got to be something on this car that's bent, okay? And that, of course, usually happens from impact. And that could be something as simple as, hitting a pothole, unfortunately, hitting a curb real hard. Frankly, most of the time, you'll get more of an indication that maybe there's something wrong is because usually on a BMW, if you hit a pothole hard enough, you're going to bend the wheel, okay? And so those forces obviously are then, if the wheel can't take the whole impact, then those forces are then, put into whatever's next in line, whether it be the strut housing or a control arm or tie rod or whatever the case may be. So that's kind of the first indicator that maybe there might have been some kind of impact damage, is that a wheel will be bent, okay? And again, that's up, you know, that's something for the technician to be looking for. So front end, the only adjustment is for toe, okay? Rear end on a BMW, and this is most BMWs. In other words, from about, I would say, well, from probably about 1995 and later. I mean, don't quote me on that because the rear end adjustability was something that they slowly brought into production. Okay, so it really depends on the model and year of the car as far as a BMW is concerned. But basically, from about 1995 and on, the rear end is adjustable as well. And the adjustments that are available are for camber and toe. Okay, caster is not something that can be adjusted. So that's the story on two- and four-wheel alignments. Like I say, if somebody, the only way to really know for sure is to go ahead and have it checked. And frankly, most of the time, they will potentially charge the same amount, whether they're just checking it and it's within spec, or they're checking it and having to adjust it. It may very well be the same amount as far as the dollar amount you're spending to do that, which may or may not be fair to you. That's up to the shop. There are going to be some shops and some scenarios where the adjustment process is a bit of a pain, and so they go ahead and charge more for that. There's going to be some cars that require shims, or in other words, are going to require, additional parts or something. And again, that's something they will know hopefully ahead of time, as far as they'll be able to check the alignment and go, okay, this is out of an alignment. It's not a bent part. It's not a worn out part. This is the procedure we have to do, and they'll, call you up and say, okay, here's what's wrong, and we have to use these shims or whatever, and so it's this much more to actually align the car. So I wouldn't be necessarily surprised by that. It can definitely, happen. The last thing I'm going to talk about is run flat tires. When they initially came out, I know with BMW anyway, when they initially came out, people were not real happy with them. BMW, they left the suspensions the way they were, and realized the whole way that a run flat tire works is that the sidewall of the tire on a regular tire, and this is even if it's properly pressurized and so on and so forth, the sidewall of the tire is relatively soft. Okay, it is pliable. It will move depending upon the forces that are applied to the tire. And again, this is where under pressurization of the tire becomes more of an issue, because the tread will actually roll underneath itself under, hard cornering or whatever. What makes a run flat tire a run flat tire is that the sidewalls are much, much stiffer. Okay. So literally, with a regular tire, if you let the air out of the tire, obviously the tire starts to get collapsed when the part that's on the ground, it starts to become squashed, and the sidewall goes out, bulges out to the side, and you can't drive the car, okay, if all of the air is let out. A run flat tire, if you let all of the air out of the tire, the tire will look like it's just barely bulging. You can drive the car. Okay, not very fast, but you can drive it, because that sidewall is so stiff, it is not nearly compliant or able to squish out as a regular tire. So the upsides to a run flat tire is just that. If you get a nail in it or there's a puncture, you can drive the car. I believe the reading is up to like 50 miles an hour for 50 miles. I would recommend going slower than that. If you're on the freeway, you're going to want to slow down. I mean, don't be doing 70 or 80 miles an hour and just figure, it's okay, I got run flat tires. That tire is going to start to overheat because of all the rolling resistance and the friction, and you're going to have more of a problem than you already have. Okay. But the advantages of run flat tires is just that. If you have a leak, if you have a blowout, you can drive, and get the idea being is you can get off the road, or you can get back home, or you can get it to the shop, whatever the case may be. You can't do that with a regular tire. The downside with run flat tires is because that sidewall is so stiff and that tire is not nearly as compliant as a non-run flat tire, when the manufacturers first went to run flat tires, they didn't really make any adjustments to the suspension to make them softer. So the initial complaints were that the car was just like totally like jittery. In other words, I'm being sarcastic here, but I mean, you run over a leaf and you could feel it. Okay. You felt everything, and people hated it. And again, I mean, I'm talking about BMWs, about customers' feedback in regards to their BMW. Most people hated them. And so there was a lot of people that, right off the bat, the first thing they wanted to do was get rid of the tires. Well, of course, if they bought the car new, the tires were new, they already paid for them. And so they thought, well, is this just the way the car feels? I mean, this stinks. Especially if they've been a long-time owner of BMWs, they really felt the difference because they were used to how a BMW normally feels. Okay. They weren't happy. And frankly, in driving customers' cars, the little bit I do, I mean, I would say that, yeah, you could feel the car just kind of, you were just kind of like bouncing around. It wasn't a smooth, good, connected ride. It was just jittery is probably the best word to describe it. Okay. What has happened? I mean, run flat tires now have been out for about 12 years or so at the time of this podcast. And certainly, you know, tire technology is constantly changing. And so they have made some changes with the suspension. They've made it a little bit more softer and compliant. There's probably more people that are okay with run flat tires versus what used to be, you know, the complaints I used to hear in the past. The issues with them, though, still, and again, you know, tire technology is always changing. So what I'm going to say is not necessarily real forever, okay? But basically, they don't wear as well, so you get less mileage out of them, which means you're replacing them more often. They are definitely more expensive than regular, a comparable non-run flat tire would be. So the price to play, so to speak, with a run flat tire is more, sometimes substantially more. They can be noisy. Again, you can have this ride issue. You know, the upside is, and this is where when I talk to people about them, I'm asking them, like, you know, what is your commute? I mean, are you a person that maybe you do a lot of driving for your job to where you are? I'm not going to say you're necessarily a traveling salesperson or something like that, but maybe you are having to go to a lot of different places. And so for you to be on the side of the road, you know, when you're going from one place to another is not a good thing. I mean, it's never a good thing for anybody, but someone who just has a regular commute, they drive whatever, 10, 20, 50 miles one way, they're on a highway. I mean, if you were to have a tire go bad on you that was a non-run flat, you know, you could call, you know, AAA or whoever, and the guy come out, the person would come out and change your tire for you because you had a spare, and off you go, okay? That's the other thing with run flats is, and this is another reason that manufacturers went to them, is guess what? With a run flat tires on the car, you don't have to have a spare because you can drive the car. So it allowed them to not only have to make room for a spare, but not have this dead weight in the car that you're driving around with that you may, in the life of the car, you may never use that spare, okay? I haven't. I've owned my car for 13 years, and I've never had the spare out of it, okay? Because I, you know, I maintain my tires. I keep a good eye on them, and obviously when it's time to replace them, I replace them, okay? So if you do have a car that originally came with run flat tires, it's entirely possible you have no spare. So if you are contemplating going to non-run flats, you kind of have to think about, you know, what is your commute and what would happen if you had a blowout or, you know, you had a bad tire leak and you lost a tire, a blowout or whatever, with non-run flats and you don't have a spare. You are calling a tow truck, and that car is being towed to a shop to get the tire replaced, okay? Now, manufacturers are making, like, space saver-type spares for people who want to do that where, you know, the car didn't come with a spare. There's no room for a spare, a separate, you know, area for it. Now, if you want to get a spare for it, it's basically in the trunk, so it's taking up trunk space. So you kind of have to weigh, you know, as an individual thing, what makes sense to you. You know, how do you want to go with that? And obviously that answer is different for everybody. But if you do go from a car that was set up for run flats and you go to non-run flats, just regular tires, assuming you get a good quality tire for the car, I think you're going to find that the ride's going to be better. It's going to be a little bit softer, potentially less noisy. The tires will last longer, and they're less expensive. I can tell you with BMW on their performance cars, like the motorsport cars and some of the higher performance sedans and so on and so forth, again, as of right now, none of the tire manufacturers make a run flat tire that would be considered a high performance tire. They're just not there yet. So on the motorsport cars, they do not come with run flats. They come with regular high performance tires. And again, on some of the other sedans and stuff, at least with BMW, they come with regular tires, you know, non-run-flat, high-performance tires, okay? And some of those cars also still do not have a spare. Some of the motorsport cars, that you basically get a kit that has this chemical sealer type stuff that you're supposed to, you know, install into the tire, and then there's an electric air pump that comes with the car. And so the idea is that you put in this sealer and you pump the tire up, and it allows you to drive the car for a while until you get the tire replaced. So that's about it as far as tires and alignment. You know, like I say, it's really, really important to keep your tire pressures proper where they're supposed to be, whether you do it yourself or you have someone do it. And you know, you definitely want to stay up on that. You want to stay up on the condition of your tires. You know, whether it's every time you take it into the shop, well, regardless of what they're doing, if you want to mention, hey, make sure you take a look at my tires. Let me know if there's any issues. You know, how much tread do I have left? So on, so forth. Frankly, they should be doing that for you anyway, but, you know, just make them aware of it. And, you know, as far as BMWs, I would say the average, most people get about 25 to 40,000 miles out of the set of their tires. Okay. And again, that's if you're driving, you know, if you're the average driver. I mean, I had some customers that had motorsport, like an M3 I'm thinking of right now. He burned through brakes and tires in about 15,000 miles, and he laughed about it. And I was, the first time I ever ran across it with him was I don't do tire installation myself, but I certainly do brake work. But I also let him know that, you know, his tires were getting low, so on and so forth. And so there was a point where I did brake work on his car, and then, of course, he's driving the car, and about 15, 16,000 miles later, the car's in for a service, and I see it's due for brakes again, and I'm thinking, what? And I look up the records, and sure enough, he's only put like 15 or 16,000 miles on it. Now, it is a motorsport car, and I'm thinking, well, he must kind of drive the snot out of this thing. And I saw that his tires were, you know, kind of down low as well. So I call him up, and I said, you know, I did brake work on this car like 16,000 miles ago, and it looks like you're going to need tires again. And I was kind of like, you know, I'm looking at it from what's the average that I see. Well, he started laughing, and he goes, Brad, you have to understand or realize that I live for my weekends. And I was like, okay. And he goes, I drive the snot out of that car when I'm driving all these different back road canyons and stuff to where I go skydiving from. And I thought, oh, okay, thrill seeker, you know, type A personality. So you know, what he's saying is that he, you know, every weekend where he's going skydiving from, he drives the snot out of the car to get there and come back from where he's been. So that's why he would go through tires and brakes so quickly. So anyway, 25 to 40,000 miles is about average. Some people get more than that because they drive, you know, really easy, so on and so forth. Some people get less. But that's about what you're hopefully going to see on your BMW. And again, other brands of cars, I have no idea. I can only speak from experience in regards to BMW. But anyway, I think that's about it. Hopefully that kind of gives you some more information in regards to tires and alignment. And, you know, again, I'm not necessarily a big advocate for having the alignment checked if there's really no reason to. You know, if the tires are wearing nice and even across their face, and you've gotten good miles out of them, maybe they're getting towards the end of the life, but you can see by looking back through your records that, hey, I've gotten 25,000 miles out of these, or 30 or whatever. That's really kind of average normal miles. It's up to you whether you have the alignment checked or not. So I hope this has been a help for you. And as usual, if you want to ever contact me via email, it's bkpodcasts5@gmail.com. Or if you ever want to leave a comment or anything on where you got this from, whether it be iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, whatever the case may be. By all means, leave a comment. I'll be more than happy to, you know, answer any questions or anything. And if you have an idea or a subject for a podcast I haven't done yet, it might be something that's in the works that I'm going to be doing, you know, sometime here down the road, so to speak. Or then again, it might be a whole new idea or subject I hadn't thought about. So again, you know, by all means, let me know that. And if you do bring up something that I, you know, eventually do a podcast for, I'll definitely give you a shout out. And hey, thanks for the, you know, the thought about doing this one particular one. I hope this has been helpful. I'm also, just to let you know, if you want to check me out, I am on LinkedIn as of a couple months ago. So that's another way of getting a hold of me. Appreciate your time listening. I hope you have a great day and a fantastic weekend. Thank you again for listening. Thank you for listening to this episode. It's been an honor and a privilege to spend time with you. I hope you found this of value. Please share it with family and friends. Above all else, with all you're getting, get understanding. May God bless you and keep you. And thank you again.